It's Oberlin College for the loss, and I take on Tucker Carlson on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They're the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza.
I felt this thrill going up my leg.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
A president! Can you believe it?
This is somebody who knows what's right and what's wrong.
You know what podcasts are, by the way?
Talk shows for people who cannot make it in talk radio.
I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up, do the right thing. For a change.
I think possibly that's the most unattractive form in which prejudice can be met in this country, is the rage of the entitled.
Welcome back to The Uprising, a podcast of LibertyNation.com. This is Scott David Cosenza, your host. And thank you so much for joining us again this week. We'll say right at the outset, the sad news is that Joe Biden for president correspondent to The Uprising and its immediate past co-host Tim Donner will not be joining us for today's program. He has been allowed to vacate and recreate, and we wish him well in that endeavor. So we will have to push on through. I thought we could do a week with no reporting on who may be the Democrat nominee for president, if that's possible. And it is. There is much other news. Really one story out of Oberlin, Ohio that I want to just occupy most of the podcast with, but a couple minor asides first. And one of them is that we got a fun mention on a podcast that I think is really one of the first big podcasts out there ever. And it's like, you know, if Johnny Carson mentions your late night variety show on the Tonight Show, well, that's worthy of a mention. And they mentioned the Humble Uprising on the No Agenda show this week. Somebody at LibertyNation.com had the great idea of doing a podcast poll of the best conservative podcast or something like that. I know it wasn't me, sadly, who had that idea. It was either Lisa Donner probably or Mark Angelides. In any case, we did the poll, and No Agenda came out in third place, and they mentioned us on their podcast. I wanted to give you a little bit of an intro of their show to give you a kind of a feel for it. The hosts are John C. Dvorak, who's a longtime career Silicon Valley computer writer, and Adam Curry. Those of you who are fans of the original MTV lineup, that Adam Curry. So anyway, here's how they started their show.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Sunday, June 9, 2019. This is your award-winning Gibbo Nation Media Assassination, episode 1145.
This is No Agenda.
Serving the knitting community for 11 years and broadcasting live from the frontier of Austin, Texas, capital of the drone, Star State. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where this podcast is number 3, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill.
In the morning.
Well, they reference their third place in the poll. They go through all the other choices, and as they do, they reach number 9. Now, I know many of you hardcore Uprising fans will be outraged at that performance in this poll, but let's just be grateful to be on the board as they are on No Agenda. Here they are mentioning us.
Number 9 is part of the problem. I haven't heard that.
I'm not familiar with it.
Uprising, which is Liberty Nation's house podcast.
That's okay. Well, the people who read Liberty Nation, I'm sure, would be, hey, I'm just happy we're on a list.
Yes, just happy to be on the list. And actually, so we're number 8. But it's interesting. Number 9 is part of the problem. And that's a podcast by Dave Smith, who's a comedian and libertarian commentator. And both with the No Agenda podcast and the Dave Smith Part of the Problem podcast, I will not listen to typically, basically 2.5-3 days before I record this show. And the reason why is because I find oftentimes their takes on things are compelling or particularly interesting, and I don't want them to color my own impression of something. For the purposes of my work and the show, it's important that I arrive sort of independently, I think, at my analysis. That's the best take I'm going to be able to bring to the table. And if it's organically the same as another's, well, so be it. But I don't want to hear, you know, their take on an issue and then feel like I need to either stay away or copy it. So copy it is exactly what I need to do right now. I listened to an episode of Dave Smith's Part of the Problem where he featured a number of Tucker Carlson clips where he was saying really like unhinged things about libertarians. And Tucker, I think, is done a great job at Fox, and he's the best of those hosts that I can think of any of the networks that does these political talk shows. He's willing to have people come on that vehemently disagree with him and have the best of those people come on to mix it up and get into ideas. And it's one of these things where when somebody says something and like you feel like they're really too smart to believe what they're saying, right? They know this is not true. So is there some other sort of ulterior motive here, or what is it? But one of the reasons why I sort of wanted to segue into this is both the No Agenda podcast, which was the third ranked, and the Dan Bongino podcast, which got number one in our poll, talked about Liberty Nation as a libertarian publication. Well, you know, I'm a libertarian. I make no bones about it. There are other libertarians or libertarian-ish writers on site. But we talked about, initially, we used this word conservatarian news and analysis, a sort of place where conservatives and libertarians sort of meet. I mean, if you're in favor of smaller government, can you find any ally on the left? I mean, the right wing has fewer than libertarian circles, but there seem to be some there. In any case, Tucker tees off on libertarians, and he's so wrong, it just seems like he's too smart. So let's get right into it. This is Tucker from last week in a segment where he went on about how Elizabeth Warren sounded like Donald Trump at his best, and he used that occasion to go crazy on libertarians.
Republicans in Congress can't promise to protect American industries. They wouldn't dare to do that. It might violate some principle of Austrian economics. It might make the Koch brothers mad. It might alienate the libertarian ideologues who, to this day, fund most Republican campaigns.
The idea that, to the last point first, the idea that libertarian ideologues are funding most Republican campaigns, it just doesn't pass the laugh test. I mean, libertarian ideologues are people who want massive change in the way our system works, almost as massive as change as maybe some progressives want, but in completely different ways. A total end to all drug wars. Just to name one thing, okay? No, and what I mean by that is there is no FDA that grants approvals for drugs. There is, you can buy heroin if you're an adult. All of it. That's what a libertarian ideologue would believe. Is that what we think of with most Republican candidates for office? Where does this come from? And yes, Tucker, I love the snide remark about Republicans protecting some industry would violate some principle of Australian economics. Yeah, it's the principle that the market, a free market, will yield the best product at the best price, and that no one person or government committee of people can come remotely close to delivering all the information that's included in a free market price. Economists will say a price is just information. And you can hear that comment and think, well, what do you mean by that? Well, the information in the price is what the cost to deliver that good to market coupled with the demand for that good. That's what the price tells you. And you'll never learn it if you have this protectionism that Trump and Warren wish for us, or I guess Tucker and Elizabeth Warren, rather. But he wasn't done.
In Washington, almost nobody speaks for the majority of voters. You're either a libertarian zealot controlled by the banks, yammering on about entrepreneurship and how we need to cut entitlements. That's one side of the aisle.
Okay, let's just unpack that for a second. A libertarian zealot controlled by the banks. So for those of you who don't know, libertarians, by and large, don't like banks because banks use the power of the Federal Reserve in order to enrich themselves. That's sort of a very common thread amongst libertarian political thought is the banking system is corrupt. And oftentimes where libertarians will want to move, you'll hear them talk about a gold standard. And one of the reasons why they like gold is because you can't print more gold. The value of gold can be discovered and mined, but it's not an easy process. Unlike printing dollars, which is, or some other fiat currency, which they can do and do to just, which destroys the value of money. So that's why libertarians think that way. And to say that they're the zealots that are the tools of banks, it's like, have you ever been around a libertarian? No, they're not for the banks. As for the comments about being against entitlement spending and for entrepreneurship, well, yeah, guilty as charged. Still more, against the libertarians from Tucker Carlson on Fox News.
Our leadership class remains resolutely libertarian, committed to the rhetoric of markets when it serves them, utterly libertine on questions of culture. Republicans will lecture you about how payday loan scams are a critical part of our market economy. Then they'll work to make it easier for your kids to smoke weed because, hey, freedom.
I can't tell you how much I wish that our leadership class were resolutely libertarian. To say how far they are from being resolutely libertarian, just to give you some broad strokes, if you don't know what a libertarian would do, what a libertarian leader would do in Congress, the president, you name it. It is maximum personal freedom and minimum laws. So there are very few areas where libertarians disagree. There are pro-life libertarians and pro-choice libertarians. Some libertarians we would disagree on when, for instance, or if you could restrict the sale of alcohol to certain people like minors or other drugs. But adults get to do with their own bodies what they want. No such things as laws against prostitution or any kind of drugs for adults in the libertarian world. There are no any kind of financial regulatory laws. All that you can't do is fraud. You're not allowed to lie, cheat, or steal. And basically common law crimes. And yeah, that's it. In terms of foreign policy, it's disengagement and a defensive posture only. That's a libertarian foreign policy. So how exactly are our leadership resolutely libertarian? Do we see any of this in a practical way? It seems like we don't. We see more regulation, more taxes. Oh, that's the other thing. Basically no taxes, too, in the libertarian society. So no public schools. You want to educate your kid? Hey, that's great. Go ahead and do it. But it's not a public duty to do so. That's what a libertarian believes. Well, I don't see any movement in that direction, but I'll take Tucker's points as he made them. Okay. Committed to the rhetoric of markets, right? But yeah, so the idea is that that's somehow libertarian, that committed to the rhetoric of markets, but then libertine on questions of culture. No, libertarians are committed to markets. It's not, we absolutely abhor and eschew any kind of putting your thumb on the scale, any kind of rent seeking, which is when a company uses the government to sort of create its own profit center. And that's what libertarians are against. We don't want any of that. We just want a pure free market or the closest thing to it. That's what the libertarian believes. And to the extent that somebody's in it for rhetoric, well, they're not a libertarian. And as far as libertine on questions of culture, I don't know if he's talking about sexual mores or anti-religious sentiment. But in any case, real libertarians allow for all sorts of beliefs about how one should govern oneself or the culture should govern itself. The questions of art and music, how that, I mean, all of the cultural questions are open in a libertarian society. What's not open is making them criminal laws where you have to do what I say or what me and a few of my neighbors say, or we get to throw you in a cage. That's what libertarian concerns itself in, not what you should do or who you should have sex with, just that as long as it's consensual, we don't get to throw you in a cage for doing it. It's not about that everything is right or even okay. That's outside of these political questions. That's what a libertarian believes. Then he goes on and says that, we're going to say that payday loans are a critical part of the market economy. That's a real cheap shot. There's an industry called the payday loan industry, which is reviled and has seen lots of attacks against it. And the sad truth is that a ton of Americans are on their ass financially, and they're in a rough spot. And payday loans help them get out of that, the worst of those spots at times, or at least it's their perception that they will. If you want to say that the incredibly high interest rates that payday lenders are able to charge in some jurisdictions is usury and not to the benefit of the borrower, I would say to you, and the libertarian answer for this is, well, we may think we know what's in the best interests of the borrower. We are not the borrower, and adults must be able to make their own decisions for what is best for them. As long as the lender isn't engaging in fraud, so if it's, you know, they say it's a X percent interest rate, but really they're concealing some provision that'll trigger a bump and blah, 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 fine. That's, in libertarian world, fine to make illegal and should be illegal. But just charging an exorbitant, or what we may think is an exorbitant interest rate on these payday loans is not or should not be illegal. And let's recall, the reason why these rates are so exorbitant is because these borrowers can't borrow at lesser rates. They don't have access to cheaper credit. Whether it's because of a lack of a credit history or a poor credit history or who knows what, they don't have it and they want to borrow this money. So you're going to tell them the deal's no good for them? And that's what libertarianism is against. You saying that you know better than they do what's best for them. We say it's a humbling experience to be a libertarian. I don't know what's best for that person, even though I may think you shouldn't borrow money at that excessive interest rate. It would be wrong to throw the lender in a cage for going ahead and extending credit on those terms. That's what a libertarian believes. Tucker says, go ahead and take that banker and throw him in a cage, and then go ahead to all the neighbors and put a gun to their head and make us pay for the care and feeding of that banker when he's in a cage. That's how a libertarian views that analysis. Well, I don't know what libertarian stuck in his craw, but then he says that we make it easier for your kids to smoke weed. Well, I would say that he may be right about this one in terms of that's where things are headed with political leaders, although they're not the leaders in this this marijuana legalization movement. They're the followers, all but one, I think, of the states that is legalized has done so on the initiative of referendum. So it's not like we have any kind of mass political leadership. They've been dragged kicking and screaming, or more likely they're like little timid birds. You know, we have the ones that have supported legalization, but they didn't have the political courage to do anything about it until they were forced to. So that's more what we're seeing here. And I would say to Tucker Carlson, your kids were always going to be fine if they got caught smoking weed because you would get them lawyered up in a hot second. And the Montgomery County police where you live, don't hassle rich white kids with a little bit of weed in their pocket. You know, that's what happens. They don't get records that are going to follow them for the rest of their lives. And even if they did luck out or not luck out and got caught up with the wrong cop, we know that you have the resources and the will to fight that battle and probably get a result where they're not saddled for the rest of their lives with a serious drug conviction or the consequences of spending time in the juvenile justice system. That's the truth of it. And there are so many Americans for whom that's not true. And when we legalize these things, that's what we're doing, Tucker, is we're saying that the rest of Americans who don't have your zip code or your wallet, their kids also don't have to suffer that fate. Oh, and here's a little factoid, and I know it's hard for liberals to believe, and gee, I guess, Tucker, you're now in that class too, but just because it's legal for adults to do something, that doesn't mean that more juveniles are going to do it. And there's actually studies out there to suggest that when marijuana is legal for adults to use, then children use it less frequently. Call it the opposite of the forbidden fruit. It becomes less of a big deal. And when you license places that sell it, they have a stronger incentive to keep people who are unauthorized from possessing it. Basically, the alcohol as distribution model in the United States has been working for alcohol. In the 1990s on my college campus, alcohol was harder to purchase than illegal drugs were. And that was before this massive wave of marijuana decriminalization. So let's let adults be free to do what they want, and maybe we'll have a better chance of keeping the kids off it. And by the way, they should be, because one of the things we know as we continue to learn more about marijuana because of its legalization is that until the brain is fully formed, the negative consequences of use, and especially heavy use, are more profound in the developing brain. So kids really should, instead of giving them lying, bad advice, like when I was a kid and they acted like marijuana was a gateway to heroin, which there's no evidence for whatsoever, and then kids find out about these lies, and then they're more likely to disbelieve true facts about drug use. You'll have more problems with the lies than with the truth. And the truth is, if you're under 25 years of age, you shouldn't be smoking weed, especially not a lot of it, because it can really hurt your IQ and your brain power. And believe me, you want to get as much of that as you can. Well, Tucker, I know you've got the brain power to recognize the error of your ways, and I hope you will, and stop disparaging libertarians. It ain't right. Okay. Well, the big news, I think, for me this week, in addition to, of course, Texas passing the lemonade stand freedom access law that allows kids to sell lemonade in front of their houses without getting arrested, was this case out of Oberlin, Ohio. Now, Oberlin College is a tiny little school that is actively progressive. It celebrates the liberal arts and is a liberal celebrant of those liberal arts. They were just ordered to pay over $30 million to Gibson's Bakery and members of the Gibson family because they actively smeared Gibson's, calling them racist in the face of just trying to not get plundered by shoplifters. It's a college town. They get lots of college kids in the store. And just so happens, this one college kid, he had the complexion for the connection. He didn't think that he should have to worry about shoplifting because he's a black guy. And he and his two black lady friends went into the store, caused a commotion. He tried to steal he tried to buy one bottle of wine on a fake ID and steal two others. He was refused service, and the shopkeeper tried to basically grab him and hold on to him for police because he was trying to steal the two bottles of wine. And he and his two friends proceeded to beat the shop clerk who chased him out of the store to hold him for police. It turns out that kid is the son of the owner of the store. Jonathan Aladin from Trenton, New Jersey, was the perpetrator of the crime. He's a black guy, and his friends N.D.L. Lawrence and Cecilia Whetstone, black women, were accompanying him in the store. And that is all the importance, their race. Why does that matter? Well, the whole thing is about their race, because if they're white people, that's the end of the story. But because they were able to cry that this was somehow some sort of racial animus, racially motivated crime, that's what led to this $30-plus million verdict against Oberlin. They started right from the night of the arrest, crying about how this was about race. The shopkeeper, the Gibson family, Alan Gibson and his father and grandfather and all the shopkeepers and others who were in the store, their story is that Mr. Aladin or Aladin came to the register with a bottle of wine and wanted to pay and check out with that with a fake ID. And that at the time he did so, he had two other bottles of wine in his pants concealed about his person in order to shoplift them. Well, the clerk refuses to sell the kid the wine, basically tries to grab him and hold him, and he runs away further deeper into the store, drops the two other bottles of wine that he has, continues running and fighting with the kid who's trying to hold him out into the street, and they tussle, and then the two girls that are with him, they start beating on young Mr. Gibson along with our shoplifter, now robbery suspect Mr. Aladin. Now, Mr. Aladdin's testimony and story is that he went in that store, and for no reason whatsoever, Mr. Gibson just started attacking him, motivated presumably by racial animus. That's all. That's the counterclaim, that he should be arrested for attacking him out of nowhere because he was a black guy. Okay. Well, the suit was not against Mr. Aladin or his accomplices in the beating or attempted robbery or theft. No, the suit was against Oberlin College. Well, how did they become involved? They're involved because of what happened next. The protests and ruination of the Gibson store at the hands of the students, the social justice warriors, and the college's administration. Now, we'll get in a second to a series of outrages were that justified such a massive award from this Ohio jury, or series of awards. There was a compensatory damage award of, I think, just a little more than $10 million, and then the punitive damages award was capped at double that. And that's where you get to this award that is $33 million and may include more millions in terms of legal fees. I think that's still yet to be decided. Well, in 2013, the Oberlin College leadership that was still the leadership in place when the Gibson Bakery incident started. Let's let the news report tell the tale. This is 2013.
Oberlin, Ohio. It is 35 miles from Cleveland, home to this small liberal arts college. It's called Oberlin College. The school has a progressive reputation, known to be the first U.S. college to admit African-American students and the first to grant degrees to women. And this community here in Ohio boasts the legacy of inclusion and respect for diversity. But that is far from what students here have been feeling in the wake of 15 hate-related events in the past month targeting African-Americans and gays. They include a sign proclaiming whites only, a swastika drawn on a building, reports of someone wearing KKK robing. But the most recent event, that was the last straw.
As I was in the car, I saw someone in what seemed to be KKK paraphernalia walking on a pathway that's like a pathway that leads to South Campus. And just like seeing that and having it sink in, like this is something that's real, that actually happens.
This is something real that actually happens. Now, the great news is that it wasn't real and it didn't happen. There was no person in KKK garb. There was a woman who was wearing a blanket. And the woman who said that she saw the person in KKK garb, we presume is not a liar or a race hustler, but just was so primed by these many events of racist reporting, and also, of course, the virtue of being somebody who is surviving the witnessing of such an event provides a sort of psychosomatic or psychological benefit that, you know, fine. Her boyfriend, who was with her at the time, by the way, did not report seeing any KKK person. And again, there was none there. But those other racist incidents that were reported did in fact happen. The swastikas being drawn and the other threatening racist messages, they did happen. But here's the thing. They weren't perpetrated by racists in order to threaten or intimidate or whatever. They were in fact perpetrated by ultra-liberal left-wing students in order to generate a reaction. They were Obama campaigners and hoaxers. Okay, fair enough. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is that if you're a member of the Oberlin community or if you're a student on Oberlin's campus, it's a big difference if the racist swastika flyers that were left outside your door were left by your classmates, Dylan Blyer and Matt Alden, in order to get a rise out of people and demonstrate the, I don't know, heteronormative white supremacist nature of our existence, I guess, or by some Buckeye rednecks that are going to murder you because you're Jewish or gay or whatever. Well, that's a problem. And if you're the college administrator and you know it's a bunch of kids goofing off and you don't tell anybody, well, it seems like you've got a problem.
Classes were canceled yesterday. Instead, students got together for campus-wide demonstrations of solidarity. I want to bring in the president of Oberlin College. He is Marvin Krislov, joins me now from campus. Sir, welcome to you. Let me just begin with sort of what we've gotten here at CNN, that police there in Oberlin, they have just told us at CNN that they have identified two students involved in some of these incidents. Can you corroborate that with me?
Good afternoon. It's great to talk to you. I'm not able to talk about the details of the investigation, but I can tell you that we're taking it very seriously and it continues.
Can you tell me if these people perhaps involved that you're hearing are students? Can you at least confirm that?
You know, I'm really not able to talk about the details of the investigation. It's a law enforcement matter, and we're cooperating with various law enforcement agents on this.
Well, the big lie there is that he's not able to communicate the information that they know it was students who did this as a goof. They knew it, and they absolutely could communicate that information. I think they have a moral duty to do so, to let people know. I mean, the Klan is a terrorist organization. You should be scared of the Klan. And if they know there's no Klan presence, if they know it's just some kids, some leftist, anti-racist activist kids who, through some crazy backwards way of thinking, think this is okay. Don't you have a duty? University President Marvin Krislov, or at least immediate past university president, he's been replaced by a woman of color, by the way. they've got some progress going on out there, to be sure. Well, no, he doesn't have that duty as far as he's concerned. It behooves him to maybe shares the same principles that the people who ginned up the swastikas. It's all good if it raises what, awareness? Well, that's what has led us to this verdict. It was a couple days before Donald Trump won his presidency that this shoplifting arrest took place. Now, that timing becomes important because many people believe that the Trump presidency, and you have to remember sort of how things were in the sort of immediate reaction to it from so many on the left who were really disillusioned by by that. They didn't think it was something that could even be possible, that the protests just sort of took, really swept up that energy, and it became, that energy fed it. But 2 days before the Trump won, Mr. Aladdin was arrested. Here's the junior Jussie Smollett crying out for his mama too, in the face of his no doubt unjustified arrest for shoplifting some wine.
Can you tell me anything that's going on?
Yes, you're being arrested for theft right now.
I didn't steal
probably
anything.
Assault.
I didn't touch him though, but he attacked me. I didn't touch him.
Okay.
Is there anybody I can talk to? My mother? Anything?
That's what everybody's writing.
So why am I only being arrested and he's not?
Now I'll let you in on a little secret. In May of 2017, the man that you just heard, Jonathan Aladdin, and his co-defendants, accomplices, Endina Lawrence and Cecilia Whetstone, all pled guilty to various crimes for their conduct regarding the shoplifting, the attempted buying underage booze, and shoplifting and the physical assault of Mr. Gibson. Mr. Gibson did not plead guilty to anything. He wasn't charged. And Mr. Aladdin and none of his accomplices filed charges or pursued any kind of civil remedy for the alleged unprovoked racial attack. But that was months later. If we go back to the night of the arrest and the days after, what happened was the social justice warrior crew at Oberlin, and they've got a deep bench on that one, I can tell you, they made it their mission to shut down Gibson's because you can't go ahead and prosecute black people if they shoplift from your store because they're black. That's basically the reason why. Or that if anybody says that they're were put upon or arrested or acted upon by reason of racial animus, that doesn't deserve any kind of investigation. It's just to be taken at face value. And that's what they did. But the problem was that it wasn't just these crazy students who did it, but the administration themselves. And as we see from the example in 2013, that's why I wanted to play that for you, so you can see how Marvin Krizlov and his crew, how they are about race matters. You know, they are fully woke. And what they did was sort of a parade of horribles against Gibson's. One of the worst things was a flyer that they circulated. The protesters were circulating a flyer that said, "Don't buy." This is out front of the establishment. And this is they're a bakery, an ice cream parlor. They have like sundries and dry goods. It's a sort of a catch-all. It looks like a nice store. You can get a $2.49 bagel with cream cheese, at least at the time of the at the arrest. That's what the sign said. So that's a pretty good deal. And they were filling out or passing out these flyers that said, quote, "This is a racist establishment," all caps racist, "with a long account," all caps, "of racial profiling," all caps, "and discrimination," all caps. "Today we urge you to shop elsewhere." Now, that's one thing if a bunch of protesting students want to go ahead and do that. But Oberlin College Dean of Students, Meredith Raimondo, well, she was handing it out too. This was the official posture of the college and its leadership. The official position of the college was that Gibson's is a racist institution. And of course, they can't exist. It's a one-horse town. If you can't do business with the college's students, and Gibson's was also a vendor for the college. They provided food for it and perhaps other goods as well. And the college started screwing with their vendor status. And in fact, they sort of threatened them and basically said that they wouldn't continue to use them or might not continue to use them if they continued to press charges against these three students. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Aladdin's plea deal, he wanted to plead guilty to a lesser charge. The prosecution agreed with it, and Gibson said, well, it's okay because it's in the community interest. The judge in the case didn't allow that plea because they thought that Gibson's was basically under threat, that if they didn't go ahead and agree to downgrade the man's serious robbery charge to something like petty theft, that they would have to go out of business. And it wasn't a voluntary statement because of that sort of Damocles. There were lots of interesting bits that went on during the trial. And I think that perhaps the most telling is that of Ms. Raimondo's testimony. Now, she handed the flyer. She was passing out the flyers. If she didn't pass them out and it was just students, we wouldn't have this case. But it's because of the college leadership and what they did to disparage Gibson's. That's why we have the case. So it's important that she was one of the people who were passing out the flyers. Well, a man called Jason Hawk, who's editor for the Oberlin News Tribune, testified that he attended the November 10 protest and that Meredith Raimondo gave him a flyer when he asked what the protest was about. Quote, "She argued we didn't have the right to take photos of the protest." He wrote in his initial story that the flyer that said, quote, "This is a racist establishment with a long account of racial profiling and discrimination," was, quote, "literature provided by the Oberlin College Dean of Students, Meredith Raimondo, who stood with the crowd." Now, the school did not like that description of the event in the local newspaper. And Oberlin College's director of media relations sent Hawk an email asking him to retract it, the detail that the literature was provided by Raimondo and instead that it was provided by student organizers. Hawk replies, "Sorry, not true. She handed me the literature." And we know from discovery that when the director of media relations asked Raimondo, she emailed back, "He's a liar." Well, that wasn't in court. Now she's under oath. What does she say during the trial? Oh, she says, "I did give him the flyer." Yeah, once the oath is administered and the penalty for perjury attaches, the story changes. And so she did. And so that combined with her statements and others of the president, that's what yielded this $30+ million judgment. You know, some of the other just wacky details of the case. The college spent $65,000 on an economist to do an economist is not fancy enough a name for whatever this guy's title is, but he gets $65,000 to do an economic study of the value of Gibson, the business that has supported multiple generations of this family. It's from the 1800s it's been open, and he says the whole store is worth $35,000. Just a real outrage. This is what Mr. Gibson says the problem is.
You know, this whole thing is just there's so much theft going through our store right now.
Yeah.
The students, I cannot believe it. I just don't know how to get control of it. Really. Yeah. I mean, it's nonstop.
Yeah.
All the poor man wants is to get control over the theft at his store at the hands of these entitled Oberlin kids. And he can't do it. He can't do it without being labeled a Nazi for just wanting to not have his stuff be stolen and be able to engage in his business. I really hope that the significant damage award, it is a huge endowment that Oberlin has, I think over $1 billion, but still, this much has to hurt. They've got to get some nasty alumni letters, I imagine. And hopefully these people will start losing their jobs. The more woke among them and administrators or boards of governances for these schools will say, we do not want social justice warrior woke people leading our schools. We want sane leadership. But in spite of this verdict, I have to say I haven't been left hopeful by this case because of another video that I saw while looking for some of the original content of the arrest itself that I could try to determine what I thought of the goings-on. And this was recorded by a local woman of color, a millennial, who's in Oberlin, and she posted this to her YouTube account.
I've been going to the store for years or whatnot, and now I find out that they might be a racist institution. Hopefully they're not, but at the same time, a lot of people are saying that they've been profiled, and you really have to wonder. But it's kick-ass that people are protesting in the town. Like, oh my gosh, it was beautiful. It gave me chills. Like, it gave me chills.
Now, this is a young woman who's been going to that very store for years and has no racial complaint, no complaint whatsoever that she's been maligned or treated differently on the basis of her race. But yet, one person says so, and it blows up on social media, and she's now questioning, think about that, years and years of her own personal actual data collection as to whether or not these people treat other people inappropriately on the basis of race, are willing to throw that all out. And how great is it that there's this a protest on? That's sexy and fun, isn't it? Well, sorry to let you off on a sad note. Here's a good one. We'll be back at you next week with more Uprising. Please like, comment, subscribe. Go to LibertyNation.com 24/7 for all your conservatarian, that's conservative and libertarian news and analysis. Thanks so much for listening. Ciao.